Jason, we finally heard from Ben Johnson for the first time this offseason. We'll talk about that and more coming up on Halas Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure, and we are in Phoenix, Arizona at the luxurious Biltmore, Arizona. Jason, one of the great hotels you've ever been to in your life?
Incredible, yes. I stayed here with my family 5 or 6 years ago. Absolutely outstanding. Like, probably, it might be number one. It might be the best hotel I've ever stayed at.
And let's make it clear, we are not staying here as part of our work trip. We are both in hotels far away and much more inexpensive.
What do you think it's going for? Because I did check before we came. What could you get on the website for a rate? What's your guess?
$1,200.
Oh, you're very close. It was $1,120 a night.
Do you think the McCassies can afford it?
Yeah. Maybe two-door room.
Anyway, this is Halas Intrigue, and we're nominally a football show. The highlight of Monday at the owners' meeting was Ben Johnson coming out and having his coach's breakfast with us reporters. It's something that every coach has to do here at the Combine. And for Ben, it was the first time that he had spoken about anything the Bears did this offseason. He last spoke to us a couple days after the season ended. And the Bears have made an effort to make Ryan Poles kind of the voice of the offseason, I guess, even though you and I agree that they're kind of hand-in-hand in all these decisions. What did you make of what Ben said about the moves they've made in the last month or so?
The moves they made and the moves they didn't make. Mm-hmm. You know, things like the obvious ones that stand out of moves they didn't make, didn't bring Kevin Byard back, didn't get a pass rusher, bowed out of the Max Crosby Derby and weren't in the mix for Trey Hendrickson, DJ Moore being traded, a lot going on at left tackle. I think the biggest thing that he talked about related to those moves that I heard, and this is on offense, I think you had a thought on the other side of the ball, but the biggest thing I heard was him talking about essentially the consequences of offloading DJ Moore, which, man, the Chicago Bears fans seem to have so quickly and conveniently forgotten or downplayed DJ Moore's value after one season where statistically it dropped under a new coach and a new scheme with many more offensive weapons around him than he had played with before. And I think if you do that, you're making a mistake and you're not listening well enough to what Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson are telling you, is that this was a move they were kind of forced into cap-wise. It's not a move they would have wanted to make roster-wise. So he talked about Romo Dunze needing to step up, and he talked a lot about Luther Burden III, and remember that Luther Burden is a Ben Johnson pick. Mm-hmm. This is Ben Johnson, I think, what, like 39th in the draft, I think they took Luther Burden. I mean, that's a really high, that's an almost first-round pick on a guy who I think everybody would say was a little bit raw coming out of college as far as, you know, a top wide receiver, and looked a little bit raw his rookie year. So much talent, but a lot of fine-tuning to do. And Ben Johnson needs to make him a focal point of the offense now. What about on defense, Pat? I think reading between the lines on some of Ben's comments Monday morning, there was sort of an acknowledgement that there is a lot of work to do on defense. This is a defense that got a lot of takeaways, but in his words, that's not sustainable. You can't always count on that. And it's a defense that wasn't really good at the, you know, play-to-play things that you have to be good at to be a good defense, like stopping the run and having a pass rush.
It sounded to me like he didn't feel like the rest of the league feared the Bears' defense.
What does that mean, though? Like, when you talk about fearing a defense, what to you does that mean? When you fear a defense, specifically, you fear what?
Violence. A good run-stopping unit first.
Really?
Somebody who is going to be more physical than you are. And somebody who's going to knock your quarterback on his butt. And the Bears didn't have much of that at all. To quote Ben Johnson, he said that they sat down and decided that, and I quote, "The best defenses usually have two or three trained killers," end quote. He was talking about that in the context of Kobe Bryant, and the reason why Kobe was so attractive to them is the violence that he plays with, both in the run and the pass. And I think you can intimate from that that's not what they had in Kevin Byard, who they love Kevin Byard, but for reasons other than that. Nashawn Wright, Jaquan Brisker. Brisker might be the closest thing they had to that sort of killer.
That type of mentality, yeah.
Yeah, in that they felt like they needed to get not only faster, but more violent in the way that they play defense. And that is something they're trying to do. To say that they've done it, I think, would be foolish because they've still got a lot of work to do. They need a defensive end, a defensive tackle, a linebacker, and a corner, and a safety. So what? One guy at every position, really, before they get into camp. And I think almost all of that's going to be accomplished via the draft.
For me, the thing I think about when I'm afraid of a defense, it's being afraid of a Myles Garrett type, a Max Crosby type. And Montez Sweat has been good, but he hasn't been that.
Right.
He has not been this just ferocious, overwhelming, disruptive pass rusher. And Dio Odengbo certainly hasn't ever been that in his career. It's a very lofty hope for Austin Booker to become that at some point. Shamar Turner, we don't know anything about him, really. His second-round pick who didn't play a lot last year. It took him a while to get going, and then when he did, he tore his ACL and didn't end up on the field much. So it's really – it's hard for me to accept them saying that the answers – to the pass rush are going to come from within, because there just isn't any proof of that right now.
I'm not sure it'll come from the 25th pick either.
Usually I mean, it doesn't.
It'd have to be one of the great number 25 picks of the decade for that to work.
When you look at two of their biggest needs, Pet, at offensive tackle and defensive end, usually the first four of each of those are gone by the time you're picking 25.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the argument for, well, just draft the second best safety or the fourth best corner or third best corner. And maybe that's what they'll do. Ben Johnson went out of his way today to say, you know, I like kind of, you know, he didn't say depth, but the ability, you know, he said that they don't need to go anywhere directionally in the draft necessarily. I would argue to you that they probably do, and they may know that. What do you make? You mentioned left tackle. We had Ben talk at length about Braxton Jones, obviously for the first time since they re-signed him. And he said something along the way that intrigued me greatly. And it was that he admitted that Ozzie Trabillo may not play all year. And I think we've known that that's a possibility. But to hear him say that out loud, I thought was notable, because this patellar tendon injury that he has is one of the ones in sports that you don't want to get. And, you know, if they're lucky, he'll miss half the season. But it sounds like they're preparing as though he'll miss the whole thing.
I think they're preparing for more than that as a possibility. And that what you said was a little different than how Ryan Poles put it in February about Ozzie. I mean, we all – this is none of this is shocking. We all kind of suspect some degree of this. But Ben Johnson said it is not only hard to and this is – I'm paraphrasing, but these are his words, essentially. It is hard not only to forecast what that position is going to be this season, but he said over the next 5 years, Patrick, you don't expect that to be the situation you're in after you draft a left tackle in the second round. Now, that isn't necessarily – it's news that they're saying it out loud.
Yes.
We've thought that. Mm-hmm. We've talked and written about for a couple of months now about the dilemma at left tackle is you need someone now, but you might just need to find a long-term solution. You might need to draft somebody in the first round. You might need to treat that position as vacant. Yep. And make a long-term solution, whether it had been in free agency or now that that's passed, whether it's in the draft. And if you end up with Ozzie coming back healthy and good to go, and you have three good offensive tackles in Darnell Wright, Ozzie Trapillo, and draft pick insert name here, great. Then you have a tradable piece. But if Ozzie doesn't ever come back, then or doesn't come back to anywhere close to what he was, you can't just keep using stopgap pieces. Now, Ben Johnson was really high on Braxton Jones in particular, and saying that Braxton Jones, who broke his ankle late in the 2024 season, had his offseason training disrupted by that, obviously, that Braxton Jones, when he won the starting job initially in 2025, still wasn't playing like he thought he could. And Ben Johnson said, we agree with him. We've seen his past tape, and we think that was injury-related. He came in 2 or 3 weeks ago to sign his contract. Looked great.
What did he say? Yoked? What did he say he looked?
Yes.
He said 310 pounds.
Yes. But that's an unknown, too. I mean, Braxton Jones was playing his way out of a future with the Bears before he got hurt in 2024. I think the prudent play in a vacuum is to make a long-term move. Find a long-term solution at left tackle, assuming the worst, I guess, from their planning purposes about Ozzie Trapillo. And if Ozzie Trapillo comes back and comes back strong, that's a bonus. But the problem is you start talking about individual positions and all the, and you'd say, well, here in a vacuum is what they should do at safety. Here in a vacuum is what they should do at pass rusher. Here in a vacuum is what they should do at center. It's not in a vacuum.
No.
You end up listing too many things for a team that didn't have a lot of salary cap space, in fact had to offload for salary cap reasons. And Pat only has three really valuable picks in the draft. There's only, and three is good. Three out of the first two rounds is good to have, but anything after that is hope. It's only those first three picks where you're drafting someone that you think comes in and starts right away. You could reasonably assume that. And I think they have more positions of need either open right now in the starting 22 or where an obvious upgrade is necessary.
And as much as Poles likes to trade back in the draft, and that's been well documented, you know, before last year he'd trade back on draft day alone 7 times. And then last year he turned 2 second-round picks into 3 of them. As much as he likes to do that, you know, the Bears' 2 picks in the second round are late in the second round. It's their pick and the Bills' pick. It's going to be a lot harder if you want to move those for real stuff. It was easier last year when they were starting toward the top. You're right. They have more needs than they have people to fill right now. And it's kind of the tax you have to pay, I think, for being good. And, you know, so many of our off seasons, Jason, have been spent with, okay, how are the Bears going to rebuild this thing? And it's not a rebuild now, but part of the reason they were squeezed with DJ Moore and part of the reason they couldn't spend a lot of money to replace Joe Tooney was because a year ago they gave Tooney, or they traded for Tooney and gave him a new contract.
Dahlman, you mean?
Dahlman,
I'm sorry.
You're
talking about replacing Drew Dahlman.
A year ago they traded for Joe Tooney and gave him a huge contract. A year ago, or, you know, they trade for Jonah Jackson and inherit a really expensive contract for him. And that fixed problems, but it helped inadvertently create new ones. And, you know, I was talking to Dan Campbell earlier at the breakfast, and he was talking about letting David Montgomery go. And he goes, it's crazy. You know, these guys are part of your life every day, and then you trade them, and you don't really talk to them again for a while. And, you know, he said, you know, that's the business. You have to do this. You have to part with veterans, to, you know, no matter how much you love them. And it sounds like that was the case with Kevin Byard. And maybe to a lesser extent, everybody else who the Bears let walk away. DJ Moore, too. And, you know, Ben Johnson, I don't think gets very sentimental around us very often. But he said that when DJ came in to say goodbye to everybody, once he got traded, that even Ben got a little choked up. And he was a player that they very much liked.
DJ Moore was somebody that never acted like he was playing on a 9-figure contract.
No.
That was never the vibe from him. He was still playing like he was trying to prove himself, and I'm guessing he will do that in Buffalo and look really good playing with Josh Allen. Some of the stuff you're talking about with the Bears financially is, with salary cap, is a little concerning to me because you're still not paying the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It feels early to be having to make decisions like this, mm-hmm. and the reason for that is because they've spent some money poorly.
Mm-hmm.
The Montez Sweat is really not playing quite to that level of the contract. He's not the big problem, but you do expect more for not only trading, not only signing him to that contract, but trading a second-round pick to get him. But the Grady Jarrett money wasn't money well spent in 2025. The Dio Odengbo money, even before his injury, you were not getting production. It's really tough to be in a situation where you're having to make salary cap centered moves and you still haven't paid the quarterback.
The Bears, I think, have devoted the top 5 money to their defense this year. And their defense isn't very good. It's not a matter of resources. It's a matter of using those resources well. And the fact that they haven't drafted a defensive player since Roquan Smith in round one is not using their resources well on defense. The fact that they have Dio Odangbo and Grady Jarrett chewing up a lot of money, despite Grady being, what, C-plus maybe in his first year with the Bears?
And old.
Yeah, and Dio being a D-minus. That is them not using their resources well. And that is, you know, what forces them into, you know, deciding, hey, you know, we need fresh blood. New blood. What's fresh? Fresh what? They need new blood or fresh.
We need an infusion of energy here.
There we go.
I mean, if you looked at their defensive line at their starting four, if this was baseball and there wasn't a salary cap, you'd say everybody but Montez Sweat could be replaced in the offseason.
Yep.
I mean, and those are all three guys, Dexter, Jarrett, Odangbo, that they sunk premium resources into, either in a contract or a draft pick.
Yeah, and they need to fix it. And I think they're telling you with their actions that they see what you see and they see what I see, which is that the defense wasn't good enough. Ben got into Drew Dahlman a little bit.
Oh, yeah, that was interesting, yeah.
He said...
This is the most we've heard about Drew Dahlman, I think, in his decision from anyone.
Yeah, and he said, you know, we tried to talk him out of it, more or less. That by then, by the time he told the Bears in mid-February, he had his mind mostly made up. That he is a bright guy from Stanford who had thought through all the different pros and cons, and that it's human nature for Drew's bosses and teammates to try to talk him out of it, and he couldn't be talked out of it.
Yeah.
Is that a good paraphrase?
Yeah. He was pretty set when he came in a month and a half ago to tell them that. I mean, it was a decision made.
Yep.
There was no moving him off of it. And Ben Johnson was a little more understanding,
sympathetic,
I think, quite than the way you put it.
And he also praised him, saying, listen, we don't get this thing off the ground without Drew Dahlman.
Yeah.
Like, that he was a big reason for their success last year. I still wonder, though, I think as human beings, Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson and George McCaskey and Kevin Warren and all those people can understand if his heart's not in it, there's no reason to beg him to stay. From a business standpoint, though, boy, it's got to be frustrating to think that you have a problem fixed that had been a problem for 10 years, then to wake up one day and it's not anymore.
Yeah, and they had Drew Dahlman on a 3-year contract, so they would have had him through 27, but I'm guessing there would have been an inclination, had he continued to play the way he did, to keep him longer than that, to sign him to an extension sooner than later.
Well, and if everything here is in service of Caleb Williams... Absolutely. I mean, he's Caleb's right-hand man in a way that his running backs and tight ends and wide receivers might not be even. They'd be in a different place, I think, if Dahlman were still here.
Two interesting things about the coaches' breakfasts at the owners' meetings every year. It's actually technically called the NFL annual meeting, but we call it the owners' meetings. That's what it is. This year, I don't think, if they did this before, I have not noticed it. But they arranged the tables by division.
Right.
Had they done that before?
I don't know, but it was...
I don't remember seeing that.
It was a stripe of NFC North going through the room.
Yeah.
And
so it went... It must have been alphabetical, because it went Chicago, Detroit, Green Bay, Minnesota.
Exactly.
From left to right.
Exactly.
So Matt LaFleur was two tables over. And I pointed that out to Ben Johnson at the end. I said, hey, LaFleur's two tables over if you want to go say hi. And he said, "What? How about you go say hi? Maybe you should." But interestingly, though, as you go through the room, I think you had an interesting conversation with Sean McVay.
Yeah, I asked what he made of Caleb Williams after their last meeting in the playoffs. And he said that the throw on 4th and 4 is one of the great football plays he'd ever seen in his life. Which, I mean, this is a guy who's seen a lot of football. And went on to praise not only Caleb's ability to improvise, but mostly Caleb's ability to play well when the chips are down. And he said that eventually, you know, the team starts to believe that, and it turns it into its own superpower. He also said that he sees Caleb around L.A., and that he talks to him, and he hopes that he thinks Caleb's going to do really well, and he hopes that he does, except for the times to play against the Rams. On one hand, what's he supposed to say? On the other hand, to get an endorsement from the preeminent voice in the sport right
now. Best coach in the league, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Andy Reid's criminally underrated, that we all just get bored talking about how good Andy Reid is. But at the very least, I think he is the combination of accomplished, respected, and dynamic. I don't think anybody matches McVay. Yeah. And to have that blessing out loud is, I think it shows you just how far Caleb has come from this time last year, when the questions I was asking at the owner's breakfast or at the coach's breakfast were, how important is it for a quarterback to be good in his second year so you know whether you have something or not? I remember asking Andy Reid, and Andy Reid goes, most important offseason of his life right now. Like, and now it's a, just how good do you think he can be?
It's also, Pat, on a bigger picture level, it's been a while since the Bears were talked about like this by the rest of the league. And there will always be some politeness when you talk about other teams. But it's legitimate now when you're having other teams, whether it's Dan Campbell or Sean McVay or Nick Sirianni or whoever, take note of what the Bears have in Ben Johnson and in Caleb Williams. And, I mean, when you have, like, for what example, you were talking about what Sean McVay said about Caleb Williams, and you were kind of watering it down a little bit by saying, well, what's he supposed to say? Nobody was saying this about Justin Fields or Mitch Trubisky.
No.
Nobody was sitting here talking, oh, man, this guy, talking openly, saying this guy is going to be a star and a problem. The good teams are watching them right now.
Yeah, I'm excited unless we're playing him. He's a fun guy to watch. I've got a tremendous amount of respect. I wish him the best, except for when they're playing the Rams. And what I thought was interesting too, Jason, was that, you know, not only did he talk about Caleb's ability to do well when he's off schedule, you know, when he's scrambling, when he's just heaving a ball into the end zone on fourth and four, but he said that in preparing for the Bears, he thought Caleb did a good job of being ready. Like, there was that combination of he studied for the test, but then he could freelance off of that. And I think that that's really an important dynamic of the Ben-Caleb relationship is, you know, I never forget, you know, somebody asked about Ben about having a receiver can catch a 50-50 ball. Ben said, I don't want to throw 50-50 balls. My whole job is to make it a 90-10 ball by drawing up a good play. That's how Ben wants to beat you. And to have that combination of schematic, a pretty smart schematic coach and a player that can kind of wipe out all of that, I think is really interesting.
The compare-contrast for us at quarterback with Ben Johnson has always been Jared Goff because they had such this great partnership in Detroit. And they're two totally different quarterbacks in that Jared Goff is this technician who can run these plays like clockwork.
Right.
Caleb needs to become more like that.
Right.
But Jared Goff can't make that play on fourth and eight.
No.
Jared Goff just can't do that. Mm-hmm. And to your point, and to Ben's point, looking at what Sean McVay said about that, how do you prepare for somebody that can do that?
You
can't prepare for that.
You can't.
You can prepare for a lot, but you can't prepare for the possibility that he'll do something you've just never seen before.
Well, and you can bet the defensive coordinators, particularly in the division, are going to spend all offseason trying to find better ways to attack Caleb. But like you said, at the end of the day, like, how many people make the play he made at the end of regulation against the Rams?
Yeah, who can Sean McVay even be mad at on that play? I mean, it's like a 14-second play. I mean, you can't.
They had a DB that camped under it like it was a pop fly, and the ball flew over his head to Cole Kmet.
It's a long time to be in coverage, man.
It's a long time to be in coverage, and you know, maybe at that point you just turn around and tackle Kmet before the ball gets there and take your chances again. But yeah, Bears are in a different place, obviously, this year than they were at this time last year, and you know, that's almost entirely a good thing for them. But you know, there is a penalty you pay, and some of that is having to, you know, part with players that you like and all that sort of stuff. Jason, we will be back here again all week in Phoenix, or at least for most of the week. The meetings end on Wednesday, and we will probably be back with another podcast before we depart. But until then, people can follow Jason and myself on social media. Check us out at the Sun-Times website. And if you live in town, buy a paper. He's Jason Leecher. I'm Pat Finley. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.